Welcome to the Canon Cast, a weekly podcast from the Canon, an SB Nation blog about the Columbus Blue Jackets. I am Will Chase, joined tonight by Pale Dragon. What's going on, PD?
Hey, Will. Not enjoying this last gasp of winter, but other than that, I'm fine.
Yeah, it's cold here, too. It's going to be cold here tomorrow, like 43. And Seeds, what's going on?
What up?
Yeah, we had 70s last week, and now it's like 43 degrees outside. Like, what the hell is this crap?
Yeah, it was just sleeting on me and Riley when we were at the dog park, so that was less than fun.
Worst there confirmed, because we have a little bit of rain, I think, but I'll take that, I guess. But so we'll go ahead and dive right into it. So, PD, I'm going to start off with a question. So what did we say the Blue Jackets needed last week, points-wise? What do we think they might end up with?
Yeah, I think we're hoping for, what, six?
Six.
They got four, which was an improvement over what they'd done before. They're on a three-game point streak, but it's an improvement, but it's not enough to get where they want to be going. And, you know, and especially Thursday against Florida, they had a three-goal lead in the third period. That should have been a regulation win, and it was an overtime loss, and that's just not good enough.
Nope. And like you said, so they blew both. Well, they lost both games to the Panthers, blowing a 4-1 third period lead. But one of the bigger stories, of course, from that game was Patrick Laine not playing in the third period, not playing in overtime. His ice time was reduced. How do you reduce the ice time of a guy who had just had 2 points in that game, including a goal? What are you doing in overtime when he's not out there? See if his arms are up.
I have an idea of how you reduce it. You're a bad hockey coach. I get that Laine has had his struggles and he's had his moments with the coaching staff. And you might think, you know, he had a 7-game pointless streak. He admitted before the game that his confidence was near zero. Blah blah blah. The guy had 2 points on the night and was driving offensive play. Looked every bit the part of the guy that we wanted him to be, and you're just going to nail him to the bench for the latter part of the entire third period when it wasn't even really clear watching it in the time. What, you know, upon review, if you go back and look at the goals that are given up, it's not like they're all three on him. He might have been on the ice for three goals, sure, but one you could have said he could have closed out more on. The other one I believe it was David Savard who was screening his goaltender. And the other one was an issue where Laine was away from the puck. It's like, what more do you want this guy to do out there? He's not, you know, he can't be both prime Alex Ovechkin and prime Patrice Bergeron on the ice. Like, there is literally zero excuse for nailing Patrick Laine to the bench as Columbus is blowing a three-goal lead in the third period. And another thing you could have done as a coach is, I don't know, maybe take a timeout to settle your guys down. Just kind of like, hey, let's get our bearings here, get some rest, refocus on your defensive structure here. Maybe get, you know, your good face-off guy and Boone Jenner out there, try and win a draw and, you know, settle the puck and maintain possession. But unfortunately, we don't do that. This is just not a hallmark of this coaching staff and this organization at this point. It's just, it was so frustrating to watch them blow that lead in real time as Patrick Laine is just nailed to the bench for no good reason. It was infuriating.
It's interesting you bring up the timeout thing, because the previous Thursday in Dallas, the Jackets had a 3-0 lead, and then they gave up two quick ones. And Tort said that he thought about calling a timeout, but ended up holding off on it, waited till the TV timeout. And, you know, the Jackets actually did lock up there. That, you know, in Dallas, they had given up two quick goals. Tort didn't call a timeout, but the team played through it, and they did what they were supposed to do. They locked Dallas down. They held on to the lead. And perhaps Torts was hoping that the same thing would happen this time, that the players would just hold on to it and, you know, not blow the lead. And I think with Laine, it's not so much a matter – it sounds like from what Torts said, that it wasn't that Laine himself did anything in particular to get benched. It was just that there were other players that – Torts trusted more late in that game.
That works out so very well.
Well, someone like Max Domi. Well, so someone like Max Domi, who has been playing a lot better this week, you know, he got more minutes, which is nice to see for him. But I think it reveals two things about Torts' philosophy. The first thing is Torts doesn't like high event hockey. So Laine was on ice for five goals in that game. 2-4, 3 against. And I think Torts would rather guys that just limit the amount of action on both ends of the ice. So I think something like Sunday's game that was, you know, 1-1 after 65 minutes, like that's Torts' ideal. Now, I think, you know, the problem with that view is focusing on the 3 goals against and not the 2 goals for. And the other thing that it shows is that Torts plays not to lose rather than plays to win. Mm-hmm. And even once Florida tied it up, I think he should have been putting a guy like Laine out there to, you know, get the lead back. Or, you know, even when you still are clinging to a 1-goal lead, have your goal scorer out there, the guy whose line has been scoring goals, send them back out there to try to expand the lead. You know, keep doing what you're doing to get the lead. Don't automatically go into a shell, which, you know, is something that they were able to do last year because they were so good defensively as a team. They're not that team this year.
Right.
So, you know,
right. It's obviously not recognizing what the team is right now. And if you want to talk about players who were on the ice and not playing well and players who were on the ice for goals against, let's talk about a defenseman who had who was on the ice for 16% of who had a 16% Fenwick, had 13% of all shots for, was on the ice for 0 goals scored, 3 allowed at 5-on-5, and played 17 minutes and change in that game. And that's Mr. David Savard. Yeah. Continues to get run out there in all these defensive situations when I have no idea why people think, I mean, other than, you know, 200 hockey men think he's worth something, but defensively, he's absolute garbage this season. He is absolutely trash. And he doesn't see his ice time reduced. He doesn't see his time get knocked. It's only guys like Laine who, again, probably, and PD, you're right, it's probably because he's part of high event hockey. But you know what? In a high event game, I'd rather have the high event guy out there who has a chance of putting the puck in the damn net. Maybe try to get this game back under control. It's fundamentally not recognizing the needs of the moment. It's basically, to me, that game was the equivalent of the Atlanta Falcons blowing that Super Bowl with just much lower stakes because.
And you're right, Cease. And the weird thing is that Savard has been on ice for a lot of high event hockey, like both, you know, goals for and goals against. And yeah, unfortunately on Thursday, it was like 4 goals against that he was on there for in all situations. And yeah. Now I will say then after Thursday's game that Torts seemed to maybe learn some lessons because both Saturday and Sunday's games went to overtime as well. And the forward rotation was a lot more sensible.
It looked normal. You had players you'd want to see out there.
Right, yeah, like he started with Laine, Bjorkstrand, and Atkinson, or Laine, Atkinson, and Seth Jones. That at least makes sense. You at least have a chance to win in overtime.
At least that way, if you lose, you can say, well, we lost. You had your best players out there. Unless, of course, you change it after the overtime starts, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, so things were a lot more sensible in terms of deployment of minutes on Saturday and Sunday, and, you know, they were getting better results from it. And,
right.
You know, not blowing massive leads and, you know, still able to score goals. And
shocker, so. playing your best players in the roles they're best suited for is probably a good strategy. I realize I'm breaking new ground here for the Columbus Blue Jackets organization, but like, hey, guys.
And so Columbus has now 2 wins past regulation this season. I forgot they actually had a shootout win against Florida earlier in the year. Then they got, I want to say they got lucky against Dallas in the first overtime with 4 seconds left, Zach Werenski, and he almost had a chance at the end of the overtime yesterday. And of course, shootout was a dud. But despite the fact that this team had a blown opportunity against Florida, they're still 4 points back of the Hawks. But they have the Hurricanes coming up starting Thursday. So they have some tough games with Detroit in the middle of Carolina and Tampa Bay. So squandered opportunity, but they're still breathing, it feels like.
It's like a playoff series. So got 3 days off before it, which is plenty of time to practice, work on things. And then, yeah, you got 2 games on the road, and then you come back home for 2 games, all against the same opponent. There's going to be, you know, adjustments, counter adjustments. I think we need to approach it with the same strategy of steal a game on the road and then defend home ice, you know, and if they can take 6 points out of that series, that would be massive in terms of getting things going. If they can't get it going now, they're not going to get it going.
Right. This is this. When I wrote that article about the upcoming stretch of games leading into the trade deadline, I was like, this four game stretch could very well determine the season. And the team is just basically treading water. You know, they're treading water right now and staying alive as best they possibly can. And like, if they lose three of four, if they take two out of these 8 points, that's probably the season in the down the tubes right now. Like, they have to show something against Carolina. And unfortunately, Carolina seems to be peaking at the right moment. They're one of the top three teams in the league by points percentage right now. The Carolina looks every bit the part of Stanley Cup contender. So Columbus is going to, we're going to learn a lot about what this organization is from a team building standpoint, from a competitiveness standpoint, from a just a willingness to fight on a night in, night out basis for your playoff lives. This team has historically played well when their backs are against the wall, and they're kind of up against it here. So we're about to see what this team is made of, for better or worse.
And even this season, I feel like the Jackets have played to the level of their opponents. And so, you know, they have not been embarrassed on the ice generally against the top teams in the division. You know, they took 3 out of 4 points out of Tampa when they played them in January, and that was before Laine or Roslovic were here, and that was without Dubois being on the ice for most of those games. You know, they've held their own against Florida. I think they only had one bad loss against Carolina, and they've beaten them at least once. So hopefully, given what's at stake, that, yeah, this team, when no one expects them to win, that's when they step up and they play out of their minds against a quality opponent.
That's their Emma. Yeah, so it's 4 straight against Carolina coming up starting Thursday with 2 in Carolina. Then it shifts to Columbus next Monday and Thursday with a Saturday-Sunday Red Wings matchup following that series.
Right, and it should be noted, Carolina is likely without their leading scorer for this stretch of games here. Vincent Trocheck got hurt. I forget what he has. Yeah, my fantasy team is worse off for it. But Trocheck's out, and Brenda Moore said in an interview over the weekend that he's out likely longer than we'd hoped. So he's probably out till at least the weekend.
Oh, beyond that,
if he makes it back for this 4-game stretch at all. So Carolina being down a point per game player is huge. That really helps Columbus. So for a team that's struggling to stop teams from scoring right now, so.
Well, I didn't even realize that Trocheck was that hot this year. I still think Carolina's lethal because they've got Aho and Svechnikov, so that's, you know, difficult enough to stop. So,
yeah. Trocheck's got 13 goals on the year, leads the Hurricanes in goal scoring.
The other big news from the last week, well, I guess it was big news, but news enough, was the trading of Vanni Vivilainen to the Maple Leafs for Mikko Lehtinen, a defenseman. So I was a little surprised. I'll be honest, I don't know a ton about Vivilainen, but I've heard the name for quite a bit. But I got the, after the trade went down, it seemed to me that he's more of sort of like this extra goalie in the organization that just they were able to just kind of let go. And then you still have Tarasov. And of course, you got Elvis and Korpisalo. So, I mean, were you guys shocked at the trade going down? I don't think any of us expected it.
I was.
Yeah.
I was. Yeah. Because I have enjoyed that the organization has had this depth at the goalie position. And, you know, everyone expects that by this summer, one of the current goalies will be traded just to get something for them before their contract is up next summer. I mean, the summer of 22. Now, in terms of Vivilainen himself, I don't know that it's a huge loss. I don't know how high his ceiling was. He's an undersized goalie, which is an issue because this is a big goalie league now. It's odd to trade him for a player that is not really a prospect. Now, Lehtinen sounds like a decent player. He was the best defenseman in the KHL last year. Didn't do much with Toronto this year in limited action, but he's, you know, 27 years old. He's a free agent this summer. Hopefully there's some kind of plan to hold on to him. Otherwise, it seems like I would have rather had a draft pick for Vivilainen. But I am intrigued by what Lehtinen can bring if he does play. I think it could preview further trade action this year. You know, it seems likely that if this team is not in contention at the deadline, that they'll look to trade their players on expiring contracts. So that could mean both David Savard and Michael Delzato could be on the move, which I would be fine with because I don't think either is contributing a whole lot positive at this point. And if we can get some kind of draft picks for them to, you know, make up for the draft picks we've lost over recent years, that would be great. And so Lettinen, if he doesn't play, he's at least a, you know, fills in on depth while guys like, you know, Peek and Kukan and Carlson get the game action minutes that, you know, to fill in for Savard and Delzato. So I'm intrigued to see about that. And with Vevalainen, long-term, I'm not too worried because I think the future of the team at the goaltending position is probably Daniil Tarasov, who has been playing really well in the KHL this year. He's under contract with the Jackets. He's on loan there. So as soon as that season wraps up here in a few weeks, he'll probably be back in Cleveland playing with them, getting some North American action. Now it just, you know, I think it limits the depth next year. If we lose one of Korpisalo and Merzlikins, then, you know, I don't know who else gets action in Cleveland.
I'd say when, not if, but right. to go back to the trade, I guess, I think judging by hockey boards, which, you know, are notoriously the hotbed of, you know, intelligence in the hockey community, it seems fans of both teams feel like they fleece the other here. So probably means it's a fairly fair trade. Vevalainen, he's probably not, you know, he's not going to start this year over Elvis or Korpisalo. And if, when we let one of those guys go this summer in a trade package for something and Tarasov comes over, he's probably not starting over Tarasov and whichever of the two goaltenders we keep. So, you know, that's fine. Maybe he gets a chance to play in Toronto with one of their goaltenders hurt this year, and maybe helps Toronto go on some sort of run to the cup semifinals and the final four. So good for Vevalainen. I'm not too broken up for losing him. It just seems like he was a prospect in a crowded pool, in the only crowded pool Columbus really has at this point. So we got something for him that can help when Columbus eventually probably trades off David Savard and at the trade deadline and maybe Michael Delzato.
That's probably the plan. Yeah, it's probably so Yarmo's plan.
Yeah, so am I thrilled about getting Lettinen? Not really. He's just kind of a body reclamation project, kind of like Delzato was to me. I don't expect the world from him. I expect 14 minutes a night and, you know, try not to be a total turnover machine. That's all I really ask for. Don't, you know, give the puck away and don't be absolutely brutal in the defensive zone. That's really all I want at this point from a defenseman, because I'm just tired of watching our defenseman right now.
Yeah.
But like you said, you know, the future of our, obviously the team is going to have to pick one of Korpisalo or Merzlikins probably this summer. I know right now, Custance has Elvis at number three on his trade deadline big board. I don't think they'd get rid of him at the deadline this year, just because what's the point? You know, goaltending trades in season rarely net much of anything. It feels more like a summer deal, especially when guys won't have to go through quarantine in the middle of the season, or Lord willing this summer when hopefully everything's back to normal. But they'll eventually have to commit to one of the goaltenders. They'll bring Tarasov over and we'll see what he has. I don't want to pin all of my hopes for the goaltending future of the franchise on the kid, and I don't know. We'll see what happens. I'd like to see him on North American ice. I'd like to see him against, you know, some NHL competition if he gets any run here, and we'll see what happens going forward.
Yeah, like you guys were saying, so both Jonas Korpisalo and Elvis Merzlikins are signed through 2022. But yeah, and you, as you're alluding to, Seeds, there was an Athletic article last week suggesting that the Blue Jackets could keep Korpisalo due to Yarmo's working relationship with his agent. I know in our own Slack channel, we have our own thoughts, and even I can't
say
stupid.
Conclusion. I'll say it. Like, stupid. If that's the reason you're going to keep a goaltender, that's stupid.
I was gonna say, like, I like Corpy. I defended him, but yeah, I mean, the numbers are there. But that's to say, at the same time, my only thing about it was, I'm not really committing to either one because, as you guys said, Tarasov might be the future anyway. But I just want to see Elvis have a chance, and he's been injured this season, and it's hard to say after just a little bit of last season and this season what he might have the higher ceiling. But I wanted to see him have a chance to play more games, like Korpisalo ended up doing. It begs the question for me of maybe a deeper issue, which we might not delve into right now, but if it comes down to Yarmo and the agent for Corpusalo, it just makes me think about other players in the past or future players that they deal with in terms of their agent and the relationship, you know, like how things sour or not.
Yeah, well, I don't think that Tibbet is as much about like, oh, Yarmo and his agent are buddies, and so it's kind of any kind of favor or anything like that. I think it's more of a matter of Corpy can be signed for cheaper than Elvis, which Elvis is making more this year than Corpusalo
is. Yeah, because he's the worst of the two goaltenders.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, though, I don't think the gap there is as much as you guys make it seem. I think Elvis is better.
One of those guys is league average is one and one isn't.
But we haven't seen enough of Elvis, though.
But Elvis is also not Vezina quality. You know, maybe he'll get to that level at some point, but I don't think we've seen enough of that for a long enough period of time.
Yeah, exactly.
I also question about which guy is the team better with. Because I know that this is not, you know, this is maybe correlation rather than causation, but I don't see the team as having consistently better results on the ice in terms of wins and losses and things like that when Elvis is playing. And I see, and so far this year, you know, Elvis, obviously, you know, the injuries have gotten in the way in terms of him having regular work, but I feel like you're always going to get him giving up at least two goals. Whereas Corpusalo,
do you forget that he was second in the league in shutouts last season?
Last season, that was over a year ago. He hasn't regained that form that he had last year when he had to be the guy. Now, also, how much of that was the team defense last year being so much better? I think both guys last year.
Corpusalo didn't do that last year.
No, but he still had a stretch where he was playing really well.
Didn't finish second in the shutout. Didn't finish second in the league in shutouts last year. And Elvis has played. Elvis has better numbers than Corpusalo does this year. Put it this way, I think Elvis is better. I think we have seen enough from Corpusalo that we know what he is. He's a 907 guy with a 2.9 career goals against average, and I think Elvis's career is better than that. I think he is the floor of him as a goaltender is better than that. Will he have a couple sinkers? Sure. Elvis reminds me a lot of Marc-Andre Fleury in that he's a really, really talented goaltender. Hey, Fleury's won a several cups, so and
Fleury's
I'm pretty sure we
Hall of Famer.
Yeah. I would take is he going to have a few stinkers in here and a couple bone scratching plays? Sure. But I'd take the guy with the supreme technical skill and the higher ceiling over the guy who's just there. And Corpusalo is just a guy.
But my issue this year is that Corpusalo's best has been better than Merzlikin's best. So like Elvis has the one shutout this year, but Corpusalo has more frequent games where he's allowed just one or two goals. Whereas Cervell's like Elvis is more in the 2-3 goal range, and Corpy has more of the 1-2 goal kind of game. So if I'm looking at the numbers here, the goals against average, Corpy's is 3.03, Elvis is 3.02. Quality start percentage, 52% of Corpy's starts are quality starts, just 44% of Elvis's are quality starts. But Corpy does have, his goals saved above average is in the negative, whereas Elvis is just about league average. So yeah, the underlyings are better for, but the actual results have been better for Corpy. And so I feel like,
and how much of that is only because Elvis only has 11 games thus far through two injuries that weren't really his fault. You know, he took a puck to the head and got concussed in practice, and he took a stick under his shoulder and had a deep bone bruise and was out for 2 weeks. You know, that's neither of those are injury prone issues. Those are two kind of fluke things.
That's the thing for me. And that's what I was pointing out last week in this article was I feel like Corpusalo, he ended up starting a tremendous amount of games because Tortorella was trying to alternate between the two. And then of course he was forced to go with Corpusalo. And I feel like, as you were saying before, that I think Corpusalo's numbers might have been a little bit better here or there with either extra rest or the few games off, whereas Elvis's numbers, maybe they look good in certain situations or whatever, but he also hasn't played the amount of games that Corpusalo has. So it's kind of hard to say. Like, in my mind, I just wanted to see more out of Elvis anyway, and we've only seen a great stretch last season, a little bit here and there this season, and at this point, in my mind, Elvis might have the higher ceiling, but I feel like Corpusalo, for better or for worse, is just kind of like that safe guy. Like, for more or less, he's going to keep you in it. Maybe that's undermining or undervaluing what he does, but I mean, that's the way I look at it. He's just kind of safe.
Shocker. The Columbus Blue Jackets make the safe choice that doesn't actually, you know, give you the high end possible result.
That doesn't mean I say they should keep him. I'm just saying for now, it's like he is what he
no,
is.
No, but that's how the organization tends to make decisions.
Well, but I feel like we're not, even if Elvis has the higher ceiling, he hasn't been hitting that ceiling for us yet. And if we can get more in a trade for him, that could be better for the team in the long run. And maybe you get Tarasov coming in that is the long-term answer rather than Corpy or Elvis. So I can see the logic in the organization going that route with them. You know, it's not looking down on Elvis, it's maximizing the value that they have with the goals they've got.
So basically what you're suggesting is the organization trades the guy with – now, I would be okay with that, but the organization needs to recognize that they're not building towards anything right now and start trading off pieces. And I don't trust this organization to do that because, you know, if you trade Merzlikins and you try to, you know, there was an article today where Portsline's like they're going to throw $80 million potentially at Seth Jones. They're going to try and keep Zach Werenski around. And they're going to try and keep all these other players around, you know. There's been a lot of smoke around they'll trade Nick Foligno with a handshake agreement to come back. It's like if we're going to trade off the goaltender with high upside – and just kind of run it back with this core group of guys without really committing to a rebuild or really committing to bring in higher end talent. Like what exactly are we doing here? To me, you don't trade off the guy with the higher ceiling to go with Corpusalo and a guy who might be the answer in the hopes of that working out without trying to say, you know, for the next 2 years, we're not really contending. We need to try and get what we can for some of these players and rebuild. And I haven't really seen any indications from the organization that they're willing to do that. So like I would need them to, from an organizational standpoint, be willing to accept the fact that for the next year or two, they're not going to be a playoff team and they need to try and get something for not just Merzlikins, but a lot of guys on this roster.
Yeah. So the way I see it long-term is, for one thing, who the goalie is not the most important thing. It was when Bobrovsky was here. This was a team that was built around Bobrovsky being good, but that's not what they're going to be going forward. Okay. And I see three pieces that this team needs to be able to build around. And that's Jones, Werenski, and Line A. If they can lock those three in, then I think it's a matter of them just doing a retool rather than a rebuild, because you can build a team around those guys plus Bjorkstrand, who's locked up for 5 years as well. That's your core going forward. And with that in mind, you might have to pay a premium to keep Line A and Jones and Werenski. And I think, would you agree, though, that we got to pay, those guys are worth paying, right? Those three?
I would agree, but I want to quibble with one thing.
Hold on to that, but let me make my point then, which I think I see where you're going with that. But so we want to pay those guys, which means we have to not waste money on any middling players or anything like that. And so if you can save money anywhere in this hard cap league where there's going to be this flat cap for the foreseeable future, you know, because Elvis is making $4 million next year. Corpy's making just 2.8. Tarasov would be on an ELC. That extra, you know, 1.2 million might be what it takes to convince Line A to stay, to, you know, convince Jones to stay. But if you have those guys, those three, I think you don't need necessarily a superstar goalie. You've got Line A scoring goals. You've got Werenski scoring goals. You've got Jones and Werenski helping the defense. And I think you can get by with okay goalies.
Do we have Werenski scoring goals this, though? Not really this year, but
no, but he scored 20 last year.
You don't need Connor Hellebuck back there, but you do need someone who's league average. Tarasov, we don't know. Corpusalo is not that guy through his career. The biggest, my biggest quibble with, you know, obviously I don't want to lose any of Jones, Line A, or Werenski, but when you're building a team, you need a center, and we don't have one of those right now. We don't have a prospect. We don't have the trade pieces to go get one, unless you're willing to part with one of those two defensemen. you're not going to find a Stanley Cup. Basically, what I'm trying to get at here is, you know, not that I'm not going to. I assume Jarmo has a plan. Lord, please, Lord, have a plan. What I'm most interested in the rest of the year, because I don't believe the Blue Jackets are going to make the playoffs this year. But what I'm interested to see is what players get run down the stretch, which players look hot, which players could play themselves into a bigger role in the future of this organization, and what does the team do to address the center position? Because I have long been a proponent of you win the Stanley Cup with a strong number one center and a strong number one defenseman. And I'm really, really interested to see, because it's been reported from multiple outlets that Jarmo is hard in the market for number one centers, and those don't come around very often. It seems like the only team that trades them is the Columbus Blue Jackets, you know. I know there's a guy up in Buffalo that's reportedly on the market, or will be this summer, given the failure of that organization, but we don't really have the pieces to go get him right now.
Well, I think one thing that would entice a team like Buffalo would be a goalie, and I think it's more likely that a goalie like Elvis would win over than a goalie like Korpisalo, or you trade Elvis for pieces that you throw in with another team to get a center. And you need that extra cap space to pay a center of that quality as well. So that's why you don't want to overpay to keep a guy like Elvis.
You got to trade something of quality to get something back. So yeah, if you're going to trade Elvis as part of something to get Jack Eichel, I don't think any of us will complain with that. Even though Seeds, I get exactly what you're saying about Korpisalo. I just want to see Elvis play, have opportunity to keep playing more games before I decide if he is, you know, better than Korpisalo. I definitely agree with the ceiling though.
And he did get consecutive starts this week on Thursday and Saturday, and that was good to see. I was glad that he got
right.
That
right. And I'm not putting Thursday's game really on him. I know they blew that three goal lead in the fourth period, but man, he got zero help down the stretch there. So I'm not really
all these penalty kills they had in that third period.
Right, he got absolutely no help down the stretch. So I'd really like to see Elvis get some run.
But then you look at, you know, Elvis gave up, you know, four goals in regulation on Thursday. He gave up three in regulation on Saturday, and then Corpy only gave up one in regulation on Sunday.
Yeah, unfortunately, the team only scored one in regulation on Sunday. You know, maybe they were just playing low event, tired hockey on the third game in 4 days. Maybe they were just.
But they played better.
Defense. Was it better defense or worse offense?
I don't know.
It's.
Well, but, you know, Dallas had Radulov back in that game, which they didn't
have on
Saturday.
Although Dallas is also playing, like, 30 games in 60 days, so.
I think we can all use the break, as they won't play until Thursday. So the Jackets, maybe the Jackets will rest up and be ready to, will have to be, like we talked about at the beginning, that they need to really have a strong showing against Carolina, who not only is one of the better teams, but they are in first place, and looking like, well, they're going to definitely be one of the top four, and Columbus is just fighting for their lives, so they can't rely. Like you said, PD, they might show up against Carolina, but they better not lose games to Detroit before they have to play Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's going to do it for us this week. Check us out at jacketscanada.com, at CBJCannon on Twitter and Facebook, and we'll see you all next week. Subscribe to the Cannon Cast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you can catch every episode. Leave us a review and a rating, and as always, we welcome your thoughts and feedback. Go to jacketscannon.com for more Blue Jackets coverage from us, and follow us on Twitter at CBJCannon. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Pearlie and the Howling Moons. Check out angelapearlie.com for more music and show dates.